Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
The more I looked into some of the numbers behind it, the more I believe that this is sustainable, because the only thing that's different, as a matter of fact, he's had better power years. To date, his first year, his rookie season in 2019, he had 21 home runs on June 8th. He's got 17 now, whatever it is. So he's had better power numbers. He's been a run producer to a high level with the Ribbies before. The OPS, all that stuff is similar to where he's been at his peaks throughout the course of his career. The average, that's the only thing. And it's a major difference. But you're talking about a 30-point difference, roughly, 30-point difference in his batting average from what his career high has usually been. I think it's more stark because of where he was the last 2 years.
Yep.
But I do believe that this is sustainable for Pete Alonso.
So do I. Let me first say I'm happy for Pete. I'm sincerely happy for Pete Alonso. Now, the numbers are what they are, although I don't know if everybody realizes how good they ultimately could be when you project this out. You know, right now, Pete's on pace for 150 RBIs. Well, again, is he going to get there? Not the point, just where he is now. 100-plus runs, 49 doubles, and he had a big double over the weekend against the Rockies, obviously, among many big moments. 42 bombs, and he's hitting 301, which I don't think he'll be 300, but the point is...
How many homers? 49, you said?
He's on pace for 42 home runs, what 150 is, ribbies, yeah.
You know Judge ribbies right now off the top of your head?
I don't. Me neither. I don't. I'll get on top of that.
I'm just curious because that's the measuring stick.
Oh, where he projects with Judge right now.
Just where Judge is current. Judge has 55, and Alonso leads the league. What? How many has he got?
I just looked
61.
At his
he's got 61.
He's got 61?
Yeah. Leads the big league. That's what I'm saying, dude. Like,
I didn't even realize it was that high. Wow. It's a great story.
Yeah.
That's why I started it that way, saying I'm happy for Pete. It's a great story. You know, I remember when we were going through this contract stuff with Pete, and I stood where I stood, and you and I pretty much stood in unison. Like, and just because he's having an amazing season doesn't mean he's going to get an 8-year contract. That's never going to happen, though. That's a different conversation.
Right.
What kind of contract he could or might get. I really found it amazing that for a franchise that has so desperately searched for a homegrown star, whether he's truly a superstar or was or not, it's not even really the point. But it seemed like the Mets were looking for reasons to get rid of him rather than to keep him. And I know he had a cluttered mind a year ago, chasing that contract and dealing with the Boras stuff. And, yeah, got his head. And he did not have a good season, which represented two very down seasons from an average perspective. Not that baseball players are defined by average anymore, but it was a bad look when there's that great of a fall. You know, you go from 260, 265, all of a sudden you're hitting 212, 215, 220. What's going on? I'm happy for him. He looks terrific. I said before the year I thought he was going to be top three in the MVP. And I believe he's absolutely going to remain there. He is having an awesome season.
I could not be more wrong about what Alonso is going to do this year, and I'm happy that that is the case. I was going based off the last 2 years thinking, like, what gives me reason why he's going to all of a sudden bounce back, and he's looked better than ever. But the one thing that we knew was that the power is there. Like, nobody would ever dispute his power prowess, his home run prowess, right? Or even driving in runs. But last year, where you have a year where you're 34 home runs, and we're referencing it as a bad year, and I really think it was a bad year for him.
It was.
This proves it. He's got 61 ribbies. He had 88 all of last year. So think about how bad that is in comparison to where he's at this year. Yeah, dude.
Oh, my goodness.
He had 88 RBI. Yeah, he was at 61. It's early June, for goodness sake.
That's the context that really made me say, wow. I mean, I knew he had the 88, but 61 already. It's not even June 15th.
All right, so he's had years before 53 and 120, 37, 94, 40, 131, 46, 118. He's had monster years power-wise. Even his best batting average year, 271, he hit 262, 260, so that's where he usually sat. That, to me, is the only difference here, being a 300 hitter this year. I don't know if that's sustainable, but if he hits 280 and puts up the power numbers that he's putting up, that's going to be more than fine. So then I just ask you, the one difference from the last couple of years to this year is what? The obvious difference.
Well, I mean, obviously Soto in front of him.
Yeah, okay, so how much... Like, is that what's happening here? Is this just about... It's not just about Soto.
No, because that's unfair to Pete.
Correct.
Now, it's a great byproduct of Juan Soto's presence, who's obviously starting to heat up and on base all the time now. So, he's got 61 RBIs. What would he have if Juan Soto started red hot? But, I mean, what do we have, 70 at this point?
Okay, but then what about the batting average? Is it... I guess my question is, and, you know, maybe pitchers are pitching him a little bit differently or a little more carefully, with Soto in front of him, maybe have to attack him. I don't know the answer, but you'd have to be a fool not to think that it's had some kind of impact on him. I'm not taking away from Pete on his own merit. He's earned this because even when Soto was struggling, Pete was on fire. But, I mean, the guy, he's turned into a 300 hitter all of a sudden with Juan Soto in front of him. I'd have to think that that has some kind of ramification.
It has. Now, I'm not going to even attempt to delineate, like, where it starts. Okay, well, this is because of Soto, and this is because of that. But I think it's unwise to look at it as all Soto.
Yeah.
Because, to me, he changed his approach. And I remember seeing this. By the way, the home run off Devin Williams really may have been not just from an emotional, psychological, you know, uplifting moment for the man and the franchise and get the weight off his back. I think it reinforced, I got to hit the right field.
Right.
And when you use all fields, you don't hit 220. Now, I don't think he's going to hit 300. If you said, take a guess right now, where do I think Pete finishes? I would say between 270 and 280. Maybe a little higher. Maybe 275 and 280, mid-80s.
Which is not nuts because he's hit 271 before.
As you said, a couple of 260s. Like, again, 300 would represent an unrealistic jump for me at this point. And maybe I'm wrong. But I just think when you got to understand, guy, he's not striking out as much. And the reason he's not striking out as much, it's very simple. I've said this before, I hate saying it because I didn't play, but it's true. When you let the ball travel deep, you're not going to flail and jump at curveballs. When you let the ball travel deep and you trust your hands, you're going to rifle it to right field. And that's what he's doing. And once you do that, now when they come inside, now it's easy city. Now you just throw the barrel and you pull it to left center, which he's also doing.
You still have his projections up?
I wrote them down. Yeah, what's up?
You have his strikeouts? He's on pace for that?
I did. Okay. 150, I think. Hold on. How many times did he strike out last year?
172.
It's definitely lower than that because I just saw it. But
his rookie season, he struck out 183 times.
Okay.
Forget the pandemic year. Then it was 127, 128, 151, 172 a year ago.
Okay. Did I lose?
I mean, if you double it right now, he's around, I'd say, what, 140, something like that.
I saw 150. My computer froze. That's why it took me. Sorry about that. All right. So with Pete right now, his projections are... This is annoying me. Okay, projections. You've got, I told you, the 42
home runs.
Yeah. The strikeouts would be 152.
Okay, so that's not that. It's certainly lower than last year.
Yeah.
But it's more than 2021 and 2022,
mm-hmm.
and right on par with 2023.
And he had how many last year? 180 something?
172.
All right, so that's 20 difference if this holds up. That's 20 empty at bats. Now, it doesn't mean you're going to go 10 for 20, mm-hmm. but you're not going 0 for 20. Right there's a little tap up in the batting average department.
I do think he's walking more just looking at the math here.
Did he walk last year?
70 times. He's at 33 right now.
He's on pace for 81 walks this year.
Yeah,
so slight upticks in walks and slight decrease in whiffs. That's good.
70 last year, 65 the year before, 67, 60 the year before that. The highest walk total he had was his rookie season with 72. So
wow, this would represent plus 9 ever for his career. Now, to me, that's the Soto effect.
Yeah, okay.
Much more attributable than Pete going to right field or some of the other things that are partially attributable to Juan, much like Soto with Judge a year ago to an extent. It's just a good New York baseball story. He's always been a little goofy, but he's always been a good guy, and he's always been a good player. And Met fans are eating this up, and they should. He looked awesome so far. I'm happy for him.
I will say there's two angles that I want to go here, and not that you want to blow it all at once, but we might as well. Hoff was talking about this before the show.
Mm-hmm.
There is a feel now, at least from me, as a Met fan, and even somebody who's unbiased just broadcasting about this stuff, I don't see any way, if Pete continues to play like this, there's no way the Mets can let him walk. Like, they can't do it. Now, overpaying him is a different story than what the market says.
Yeah.
I'd be very curious to see what the market says Pete is off of this year. Did they radically change their thinking? Like, hey, this is what he's going to be, a 280, whatever. You want to say 300, fine. Just massive run producer moving forward. He's unlocked something. He's figured it out. Or are they saying, okay, well, this is a big year, but he's still getting older, you know? Big body, whatever you want to
say.
First baseman that's maybe not going to age particularly.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. But whatever the market says he is,
yep.
I think the Mets are going to have to pay at least that, maybe a little bit more, to keep him here, dude, there will be a, like, I don't care if you got Soto or not, the fans will go nuts.
Oh, wait till he passes Darryl. What does he have, 12 more to go? Whatever, right. Did I just pass David Wright over
the
weekend?
He's got 10 more to go.
He's got, that's right, 9, and then 10, 9 to tie, 10 to go.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, he's not passing Barry Bonds or Hank Aaron, or I understand, but it matters. There's something there that you can't quantify necessarily, but no, there would be an outcry if he's on a different team next year.
It happened last year.
Yeah, well.
It was about to. It was 2 years in a row.
It was, but I felt like last year there was an awakening. There was a changing of how the Met fan processed Pete's future. And I think that before last year, now it changed a little bit with the Williams home run and then a couple more against the Phillies. I get that. But I think last year there was a growing percentage of Met fans who looked at him as a decaying asset. And all the things that you were about to say, you know, on the wrong side of 30, right-handed first baseman, right-handed batter, slow-footed, not a body that probably projects very well in terms of bounce or sustainability. But I think that changes to an extent, but I don't think it fundamentally changes how Stearns views him long-term. Not to throw cold water on the season.
Right.
I think that there might be, it'll be an easier negotiation, but it's not going to go from what they offered to 8 years. Like, that's not going to happen.
Right, I still think you're talking max 5 years.
In the neighborhood.
Yeah.
It's just not going to change a ton, but it will change something.
Then the other part of it, what we are watching with the Mets right now, with Lindor, Soto, and Alonso, is they are, when all said and done, going to be the three best position players in the history of the franchise.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Lindor's homegrown and is going to have all the numbers. Lindor is going to go to the Hall of Fame and he's going to be here for an extended period of that Hall of Fame career. And the same thing about Juan Soto. Now, I mean, people are going to speculate about Soto, but even if he gives you 5 to 7 years. Like, think about it. Now, it's not saying that these guys are that great, although they are. It's also speaking volumes to where the Mets franchise, like, name the best players in the history of the Mets franchise.
Piazza, David Wright, Eddie Kraepel. You got to give love to Eddie with all those hits early on. Enough, sure. Strawman.
But those guys.
Mazzilli when he was young, when he first got there. I hear you.
These three.
Cleon.
So not only are you seeing what I believe are going to be the three best position players, and I love Mike Piazza more than anybody, but when it's all said and done, these guys are going to surpass him with that. I love David Wright as well. These guys are going to surpass him. Carlos Beltran going to surpass him. Darryl Strawberry going to surpass him. Not only do you have three individuals who could be the greatest, because I was saying this a few years ago about Alonso before any of the, you know, before he had some bad years, any of the clubhouse stuff that we were talking about. Like, he was projecting to be the greatest Met of all time. There was no doubt about it. Position player I'm talking about. Obviously, we know about Seaver. And now you pair him with Lindor and what he's been doing, and you pair him with Soto. You have three individuals that each on their own could be looked at as the best position player in Mets history, and now they have them all together at once. This is something that the Mets franchise has never seen.
Well, I mean, obviously, yeah, that's a unique way of looking at it. I didn't know you were going there. I appreciate the historical element, too. It's cool. I'm just trying to do this fast
right, well,
in my
think
mind.
About it.
Well, I'm going to do it. So forget about 69 and 73. Where, right. You know, we know the names, but we didn't see them. Okay. You go to 86, and right away, you had two platoon situations. You had Lenny and Mookie in center, and you had Wally and Tim Tuffle at second. So right away, like, and then obviously Keith was phenomenal.
Well, even just take the best
Gary,
individuals.
Whatever.
Yeah.
But I'm saying sequentially, 1, 2, 3, that 86 Mets team, which is the most powerful Mets team that I've ever seen, is one of the best teams I've ever seen, period. They were rolling out two platoon guys to start.
Right.
And then it started getting, like, you know, again, with Keith and Darryl and Gary, et cetera. But, you know, I hadn't looked at it like with a Lindor.
Well, think about it this way too, BT, right? Take those three individuals.
Soto, Pete.
Who were the three best individual players on the 86 team? You're going to go Keith, Gary, and Straw.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
okay.
Definitely.
Straw, we know what happened with him.
Well,
and now I'm talking about from a Mets perspective.
I got you. Forget about the other stuff.
Yeah,
you have to.
Gary Carter, while he's a great Met and a lot of people want to retire his number, these guys are going to surpass what he did.
He was a diminished. He was big. Yeah, he was not in his absolute prime when they got him in 85.
Look at the numbers.
I know.
He doesn't even come up when we say.
He was a better expo than Met, period.
100%.
Yep.
And Keith Hernandez, same thing. Like, while his number is retired, and he was no doubt a great Met, he's not going to. When we talk about the greatest position players of all time for at least an extended period, it's Piazza, Strawberry, Beltran, right? At least in my mind.
Yeah.
And I think all three of these guys individually will surpass each one of those guys individually, and now you're talking about the three of them together.
It's not nuts. It's a little early, only because, you know.
Well, Soto for sure.
Well, that's what I was saying. You know, Soto's first year, and he's obviously heating up here. If Pete regresses, which I don't think he will, I think he's going to finish top three in the MVP.
And even if he doesn't, he's going to have the home run
record. He's going to have the home run record. And Lindor at this point is, it's fairly undeniable, Lindor's place in Mets lore. Took him a while to get there, which is all I was complaining about. And by the way, just quick props to him. Coming off the bench with the broken toe.
Beast.
And first of all, he's stealing bases, but pinch hitting a bit. Like,
I mean, come on.
It's rounding into form nicely for the Mets. And even aside from the best position players and the other things we've hit here, you've got a couple of arms coming back.
Yep.
And, you know, number one. And number two, and Mauricio showing signs. I think the Mets, I think they're going to make a trade. Because I think that they know that they're right there. And when you get to five, six, even though McNeil's hot now, whatever, five, six, seven, eight, nine, I need one more sure thing. If they can, whether it's Duran from the Red Sox, I heard that over the like, if they
center make. Center fielder would be preferable.
Dude, if they make one big power move, the lineup, then I can really say this team could win the World Series.
So that's.
Still can't say it yet with the lineup.
That's kind of why I brought it up, is because I just want to bring up the idea. Like, I don't really care about greatest Met position player or the records necessarily, but it just shows you where Mets baseball's at. I really firmly believe that this is the beginning, if not in the midst of the greatest run that we're going to see in the history of the Mets franchise. Yes, some of that is projecting forward.
It's a big statement, buddy.
Well, is it, though?
Well, it's not, and it is.
I mean,
because you're projected a ton, but you're also incorporating a lot of years of failure.
Well,
so I know what you mean.
How many times have we referenced the fact that, you know, they've only made the postseason in consecutive years twice in their history?
Yep.
So they're going to do that this year. So check the box there where, you know, playoffs a year ago, playoffs this year, okay, check. And then next year is going to be the first time, you hope, they make it 3 years in a row. But we're only getting going here with Soto. Lindor's in the prime of his career, and I'm assuming Alonso's going to sign for at least a few more years. If you add all that up, that's where you get, to me, the best players, position players in the franchise history, plus the resources that the owners put in, plus the success that they're having as a team with the pitching, as you mentioned. Like, the Mets right now, it's early, it's June.
No, the Mets are good. It's a fair read, dude. I don't even know if I just gave enough credit where I said the Mets could. This is the first time I thought the Mets could win the World Series, or, you know, get there and win. And I kind of ended that with, but they got to make what trade? That's almost still sellable. Like, even if they don't make a trade, I'd have to, you know, objectively look, as I have, look at this team and say, I'm not seeing a lot of teams better in the NL. And I know what the records are.
Right.
And they're getting healthier. Mets look really good right now. Mets are humming right now.
Dude.
No doubt.
And it feels great. Did a little Yankees as well, BT, earlier. You mentioned it during the Yankees turning point. I was just looking over the schedule. So the Yanks will be in Kansas City for the next three. Both teams are off today, the Mets and Yanks. And then you get, which sucks, no baseball tonight. Then you have the three games in Kansas City. Then a big series. You know, with the Red Sox taking two out of three, gives them some hope, gives them some life as far as the American League East is concerned.
Mm-hmm.
That, I think that's a big regular season. You know, as far as June goes, mid-June, that's a big three-game series for the Yanks. You want to run away with this division. I know that the other teams are in front of them, the Blue Jays and the Rays. I don't care. To me, I'm still looking at the Red Sox.
Yep.
As a legit threat, you look at the run differential. You also look at the Red Sox losing all those one-run games. Their luck is going to turn a little bit, I think. That would be the team from the Yankees' perspective I'm worried about the most with the Red Sox. That'll be a big three-game series coming up at the end of the week.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it wasn't a very good performance over the weekend by the Yankees. They hit certain spots they hit, certain spots when they hit, they didn't get the pitching and vice versa. Yeah, I mean, you don't like to give up, 10 runs on Sunday Night Baseball. Not the best look there.
Mm.
The Red Sox, though, to me, I don't know. I'm not about to make the Blue Jays more serious than I really think that they are. Same with Tampa, but it's the division's tightened up a little here, and I'm okay with it. I find it interesting. I want to see what happens when Luis Gil comes back. He's making good progress here, and yeah, I still think there's a lot of good signs with this Yankees team. I do. I think that any thought that they were going to run away with it. I didn't buy that coming into the season. I will admit, there was a point probably within the last week and a half or so where I'm like, all right, maybe they are going to mess around and run away with this thing and wrap it up in another month or so and just kind of, you know, tinker for October. We'll see. Maybe they have a little more of a battle, you know, a little more of a battle on their hands.
Did you see the stuff with Hunter Dobbins last night, the Red Sox starter?
Yeah.
How he said, and people are making such a huge deal of this.
Because everybody's soft, that's why.
Well, did you read the full?
I've read parts of it.
Okay. There were certain parts that the only thing that mattered, like, everybody's going based off of the headline. Oh, he said he'd rather retire than pitch for the Yankees. Okay. First of all, he's just saying that. Mm-hmm. Don't take it so personally, Yankee fans. He'd rather retire than pitch for the Yankees. And do you know why he said what he said? Because his father grew up a diehard Red Sox fan. You should respect it. I respect Dobbins. A rookie like that with the guts to come out and say, I'd rather retire if the Yankees were the only team in baseball. Now, he's obviously not going to be the case. You're not going to retire. You're going to sign with the Yankees. You're going to wear that hat proudly. But the fact that he could say that now as a rookie, I'd rather retire than play for the Yankees because his father despised the Yankees, grew up a diehard Red Sox fan, then to go out there and solid, I thought, against the Yankees outside of the two-run homer, which I don't know why you're pitching a Judge anyway, but the two-run homer Judge hit off from the first inning. He was really good Sunday Night Baseball against the Yankees.
Yeah, so. I agree. Listen, it can't work both ways. If you're offended by the Dobbins comment, then were you okay when Rex Ryan came in guns a-blazing saying, we're not kissing Belichick's rings or... You know, at some point, Aaron Glenn at a press conference when he's asked, or if he's asked about the Dolphins rivalry and the fake spike or whatever, even the Pats or the Bills, some divisional rivalry that he speaks to that. I mean, it's going to pump Jets. I don't think he's going to play the game like Rex did. I know that. But he might address it in a way that is, you know, a little fiery and something, a rawness that we appreciate. I think that part of the issue, and I think Evan was talking about this on Friday, I forget which day, but the Yankees-Red Sox rivalry, the energy has undeniably dissipated. And not even close to what it used to be. Actually, we...
Maybe this will help them with this. With those comments here.
Listen, the rivalry comes from, I'm trying to get this, and you're trying to get the same thing, and we continuously meet, and one of us keeps losing, and it keeps altering how we're perceived historically. That's because that's when you get the emotion. When you get the emotion, you probably get some... You know, whether it's a fight or, you know, some inside pitches, and that just leads to all this. Matter of fact, there were a pitching change last night. I just didn't think, waiting for it. So I'm recording the game. Go to YouTube. I type in, I was showing Colt, Yanks Red Sox brawls, right? And again, it's I don't mean that a rivalry must be without a brawl. I'm not saying that at all. But boy, it's easy to forget if you're if you're my son's age, who's 10, or young fans out there. Like the disdain for each other, it's gone. It's too friendly here. You know, whether it was Varitek and A-Rod, whether it was obviously Don Zimmer, or, you know, the bullpen situation, Kareem Garcia, Pedro going headhunting, something in the 70s with Bill Space Lee and Greg Nettles when he threw him to the ground that he dislocated his shoulder, ruined his career, or Carlton Fisk and Thurman Munson. It's gone away. And when he says something like that, I'm like, good for you, kid.
Also, remember, he doesn't play for the Yankees. So, like, we look at it here in New York like, oh, how do you? That was the big thing. They're asking Judge and Boone, oh, what do you think of these comments? Or Jazz, and they're talking about it on the broadcast.
What did they say? They didn't make a big deal out of it.
Not really. Boone was like, what? Like, if you take it logically speaking, and I think that's kind of what Boone did, where he was like, well, I don't understand why somebody would say that and rule out the Yankees. Like, clearly it's a rookie.
From a business perspective, you mean?
Yeah, like, it just from player to player, like, the veterans can't understand why you would say that. But think about it the other way. How do you think the Red Sox fan feels about Hunter Dobbins when
they love him?
That's what he is. He's a Red Sox. His father was a Red Sox fan.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
It doesn't mean that you got to hold him to it, and 5 years down the road, the Yankees trying to get him in free agency. Now, maybe he does stick to it. Maybe he doesn't. Who the hell knows? Who the hell cares? It's what he felt in the moment. I think it was a great comment that people are taking offense to from a Yankee perspective. Got to stop it. The Yankee players themselves didn't really seem to take much offense to it. Maybe a little surprised.
You think Yankee fans are taking offense to this? I haven't gotten wind of that. Like, at all. I don't care.
I saw some on social media last
night.
Well,
forget about that. Well, the dopiness on social media.
Right, but that's some of it. You know, and also during the broadcast, they made it like it was some big deal. Like, he offended the high and mighty Yankees. Hey, how about the Red Sox perspective? The guy's going to be a hero amongst the Red Sox fans now.
That's a good look for him. That's a way to ingratiate yourself to a fan base that's dying for something to gravitate towards again.
BT and Sal on the Fan, 888-808-1019, the number to call. Back to the Knicks conversation. Darren is calling from Tampa, Florida. What's up, Darren?
What's going on, guys? How we doing?
Good. How are you?
What's happening, bud?
Good, good. Just real quick on Alonzo, I think you're completely correct with what you guys are saying. The one thing I've noticed is his pitch recognition is a lot better this year. He's not flailing on that backdoor slider and getting behind in counts. He's taking more pitches. But what I wanted to say on the Knicks is I don't understand why we're enamored by Jason Kidd when we take in everything that they've said. I mean, the reason why Thibs was fired is his lack of adaptability and never winning at all, right? Rose's statement was, we want to deliver a championship to our fans. Jason Kidd's got a career losing record in the postseason. He's never won.
So it's Tom Thibodeau.
Never been coach of the year.
Yep.
So it really kind of makes it a two-horse race, in my opinion, right? One, regardless of what we feel, he's won at this level. It's Mike Malone. He's from New York. He's born in Queens. I mean, the guy's in his early 50s.
Yeah, but he also failed more often than not with the best player in the world. And also there was some infighting with the front office. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, look, if you're wanting to deliver the championship, you need the pedigree first. You can't just think that, oh, well, we're just going to reinvent the wheel and hopefully Jason Kidd becomes a championship head coach. The only other guy who obviously we've heard said, you know, no to the job is Jay Wright, because he knows, obviously, the Nova Knicks and has won with them before, obviously, in college. But, I mean, Mike Malone is a career head coach that – he had 150 games over 500 the last 10 years for the Nuggets, right? He won it all still, 2 years ago. So you need somebody that has the capability of winning a championship. He's clearly shown that over the last couple of years, and Jason Kidd hasn't. So, you know, that's the thing I want to address.
Well, but why
if,
not?
If it's more of the same. If it's more of the same, I'd rather have had Thibs. You know what I mean? Like, if it's something different, you need someone that's won a championship.
See, I disagree with that, Darren, and thanks for the call. I'd be curious to get your thoughts here, BT. Mm-hmm. Just because somebody won a championship does not mean that they're going to win another championship or that they're the best head coach to get you to that level. I would value more so who's going to work together with the front office, who's going to work together with Jalen Brunson. That's why I'd prefer Jason Kidd over Malone. Yeah, old me, without thinking it through too much, you say, well, Malone won a championship, he's the guy.
Mm-hmm.
But then you hear some reports about what went wrong there, and you actually think about it, well, is winning one championship with Jokic a great accomplishment, or would you look at his time there as saying, you know what, could be deemed a failure, being that he didn't win enough with that type of player?
Well, I don't think they had enough star play. Like, I mean, obviously Jokic is great, Jamal Murray is very good.
Yeah. They should have won more.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing that gets glossed over a little bit with Mike in Denver is that, you know, he won 50 games a lot. So we talk about Tom Thibodeau where, you know, the Knicks won, what, 51 games this year and 50 a year ago. And we just don't see that too often. But Malone did that with the Knicks. Malone did that fairly frequently with Denver. I can't speak to Denver's ownership dynamic. I think it's incredibly odd that he got fired with a couple of games to go this year. Is that what now? That's what I've got to probe deeply into. If I get the sense, if I'm the Knicks, and you're not at least looking at Malone, which you have to be, I think on some level, as I investigate that situation, that's all I care about right there. To blow out a champion with three or four games to go, was it so bad because the players were more at fault? Was it truly Malone being a tyrant or being something else? I don't know. Was it a little bit of everything? I don't know. But they need to come up with that answer. And if the answer is satisfactory enough for them that Malone is the coach that I perceive him to be and that there is an upside, because that was my original thought. Remember, before I start talking about Jason Kidd, who I like, I don't know if I love him. You know, I like him. But I was saying on the air during the regular season, once Malone got fired, I'm like, ooh. Mike Malone, Knicks, if this doesn't work out with Tom Thibodeau. That was always my first instinct because I never thought that they would make a trade with the Heat for Spoelstra. So I love Malone. I think he's old school, but 20 years younger than Tom Thibodeau. That should be their guy, but you have to figure out what the hell happened when you get whacked with a week to go. That's weird.
Malone in the playoffs, his first year 7-7, second year 9-10, third year 4-6, fourth year 1-4. Then they won the NBA championship, so obviously a 16-4 record is going to pad those overall stats.
Yep.
7-5 last year, and then got fired before he could get to the postseason this year. I think Malone is solid with his resume. I don't think that there's anything that shows me that he's clearly better than Tom Thibodeau. All you would look at is say, well, he won an NBA championship. But if you're going to do that, you have to look at the circumstances as to why he won the NBA championship. So I'm not taking it away from him. He did it, but I would value more consistency throughout somebody's career, especially when you factor in different stops. Now, I don't know. Malone, when he was in Sacramento, and I don't remember what happened there exactly, going back over 10 years.
He had one decent year. That's a tough job.
With Sacramento, it was 28-54 his first season, and then 11-13, and I'm assuming he got fired after that.
Mm-hmm.
Then got hired by Denver the next year. Either way, he was a longtime coach in Denver. They felt maybe they needed a new voice, moved on. The way that it went there, getting blown out in the postseason, a year ago. I'm not sure. And then the reports about maybe some... issues with him in the front office.
Yep.
I'm not saying I'd be opposed to it, and at least you could say, well, he won a championship before. It would be in line with thinking their singular focus is to win a championship. I don't think he's the right fit here for the Knicks.
I don't think he's perfect. I think he could be an outstanding fit, but I also don't think it's a layup. And I think that this goes back to what we started the show with here. We are now a week into the Tom Thibodeau assessment era. And what the hell happened that led to his firing? And it doesn't seem like the Knicks have a very identifiable plan, and that's a problem.
And then you're doing your podcast there Sunday?
Yeah, and then an extra show. So I'll be doing the Unkillable Pod.
Unkillable Podcast.
Yes, not
on Sunday.
Yes.
Gio there.
It's not the unlikable one
what
there,
time,
Gio.
You know what time you're doing it Sunday yet? Do we have that set up?
I don't know, but I'm looking forward to hearing Gio's new pod. Let me tell everybody about how much I golf pod.
Jeez, I shouldn't have said anything. All right, I'll be out there Saturday doing a show 1-4 solo.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to be doing an SNY show. I told you who's going to be on that panel. Did I tell you?
I don't
yet?
Think you did.
So I'm hosting a baseball night in New York, special baseball night in New York.
Okay.
Piazza, Franco, Gooden.
Oh, God, you're going to geek out. You are going to be in heaven.
And then Saturday Night Live, Kenan Thompson.
Okay.
I guess he's a big Met fan. I had no idea.
He's funny. Yeah. I like some of his skits.
Yeah, so I like him. I never met him.
But, is he the one who does What's Up With That?
Yes,
What's Up With
yes.
That? That yeah. is...
He was in the Mighty Ducks movie.
What's up with that?
Yeah. He's great, but apparently he's a big Met fan, so it's like a Mets panel type
All
thing.
All right.
But Piazza. I hope I'm not leaving anybody. Piazza, Franco.
Daryl?
Doc, no. I think that Reyes was maybe going to do it, but then he couldn't.
Look at you made it. This is more validation that you made it in the business, Piazza. Hanging out with your heroes.
Yeah.
That's going to be fun, man.
BT and Sal on the Fan. Looking forward to that. BT and Sal on the Fan, 888-808-1019. And I was hanging out with my heroes over the weekend as well.
Mm.
With Francesa. You saw me.
I did see that. That's why I said before when you put the picture out there, the way he holds his hands in every single picture.
Well, don't they teach you to do that, though, in TV? You either, when you're in TV, right, you don't want to just stand there awkwardly.
No, I agree with that.
Okay, so maybe that's a thing. And then, because I find myself doing it when I'm talking on TV without papers in my hand.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm standing, you're supposed to, connect your hands, kind of.
Yeah, but he connects it like he's taking a leak.
Well,
or he's holding a massive lightsaber.
I did not notice
that. No, come on. His hands are like this.
Yeah.
They're obviously around this belt. The same picture every time.
That's his thing.
But does he know it's his thing, or is he just doing it?
I don't know. I didn't talk about it. I just took the picture and moved on.
Because you're his friend, I think you should ask him.
Yeah. It was great hanging out with him. And I'll tell you, this is where I got caught. So Mike and I were talking, and we're talking shop. We're talking radio. We're talking sports.
Uh-huh.
Great conversations, just whatever, throughout the course of the day.
This at the track or at a restaurant? Yeah. Where are you guys at this point? At the track?
We're at the track in Mike's owner's box. He invited me and my buddy Saratoga Wills down, so we went to hang out with him for a little bit.
Nice.
This is Friday before the Belmont Day. And Lee Einsiedler was there. Big fan of yours, by the way.
Oh,
he said
nice.
Say hello. Yeah,
thank
he listened
you.
To the show.
Okay.
And he's all into the races and all that stuff. And all right, so Mike and I are talking. Lee gets up to go make the bets or whatever. My buddy Saratoga Wells gets up to go make the bets or whatever. Mike and I are talking shop, laughing, whatever, blah, 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 reminiscing the old days. Lee comes back and he's like, oh, I hit on the race. And I'm like, where the hell was that? Like, he's got his winning ticket. He hit for whatever amount it was. I'm like, he couldn't give me that info before. He's like, oh, you guys are too busy talking radio.
I know.
I thought you were going to get annoyed that he interrupted the conversation you have with Mike just because you were enjoying talking shop. You were pissed off he didn't give you a tip.
Yeah, where was that? You were too busy talking radio. I was like, all right, fair enough. All right,
I'm sure Mike had the tip. I'm sure Mike didn't get taken to the cleaners like you did.
Yeah,
rough weekend, huh?
I had a rough weekend.
Come on, how rough was it? How many? Let me ask you, without the denomination, how many different races did you actually bet?
Actually, not a lot. So normally I would go and bet a ton of races.
Okay.
This time it was more having conversation, hanging out, drinking some Surfsides.
Okay.
And based on certain information I was gathering or you know, I'm not a handicapper.
No, me neither.
I look at the names and I'm like, yeah, that one looks good. So I'll take the information from the groups around me.
Yeah.
And based on that, then I would go a little bit bigger than I normally would on lesser amount of fewer races.
So would you bet like 5, 6, 7 races in total? Like, I'm trying to get a sense of how many.
Yeah, probably 10,
9.
No. I would say 5 to 7-ish, maybe over the course of 2 days.
So 0-7, basically. Did you win one?
Over.
Ugh.
Took the over. Ish. Probably my worst beating that I've ever had.
My God. The exact opposite of the Mets in Colorado.
That's all right. We'll get him back next time.
We're
going to go back up in the summer. All right, BT and Sal, the Fan, 888-808-1019. Justin's calling from Queens. What's up, Justin?
What's up, guys? Listen, love the show as always. I love when people say, oh, yeah, we should get this guy because he won a championship before. So did Doc Rivers and Frank Vogel. You want those guys? Just because they won a chip before?
No chance.
They wouldn't be you know what I mean?
Exactly. No, I do.
So listen, now Mike Malone, good coach, right? But a couple of things with him. He had beef with Popeye Jones. Couldn't get along with the management, right? And he's friends with Diggs. I don't know if he's going to be the right fit here with guys like Worldwide West and Leon Rose. Who knows if they can really get along like that? Right, because we know that those guys are heavily involved in the Knick roster. So that's the first thing. Second thing, Jason Kidd, I like Kidd for a couple of reasons. One, he's a point guard, right? So you would figure that he would be able to change the offense a little bit. Even if it's not with Brunson, it will be with whoever we have coming off the bench to try to run the offense a little smoother, not so heavily dependent on Brunson. Two, he uses his guys. I think they play like 10, 11 guys in Dallas. And they're like a run-and-gun, defend, crash-the-boards team. Usually, you build a team the way the coach likes to coach. So you get players that will fit in, obviously. So with Kidd, I think that it would be a good fit because he's going to use his bench and he'll have the offense flowing a little bit better. What do you guys think?
Well, I think it's a good call. I think you make a lot of good points there. And stylistically, if that's what he would try to do, then I would push back and say, you want to run and gun with Carl Anthony Towns? You could barely get up and down the court. Now, there's ways to work around that. You could feature him, you know, different ways and shoot more threes, as Sal's been saying for a while, and then reduce his minutes a bit. When he's not on the court, maybe you go a little extra more in terms of running and gun and open court stuff. Yeah, I don't think that there's a perfect coach because I don't think it's a perfect roster. It's very good. It's a very good roster. So you just need a very good, compatible coach. That's the challenge.
There's something about Jason Kidd that gives me confidence that he can maximize this roster. And I'm not saying that I think he's better than Tibbs, because I don't. But under the circumstances, there's a nice balance that I feel Kidd possesses. He's unafraid, unintimidated. He's got experience.
Yeah.
He can handle stars. He was a star. He's familiar with Brunson. He's familiar with New York. I think that there are a lot of boxes that are checked with Jason Kidd. Now, ultimately, what are the results going to bear out? Who the hell knows? I have no idea. But under the circumstances, without a clear, hey, Phil Jackson's available as a head coach in his prime, go get him. Without a clear, Pat Riley's available in his prime, go get him. There isn't that. You could poke holes in Malone. I could certainly poke holes in Johnny Bryan or Jay Wright coming back.
Everybody.
Correct. There were two guys. Now, I want Van Gundy just because I love him and he's a known commodity.
No, but the hole that you poke in that is he hasn't done it in 10 years.
Correct. And then there's maybe some, you know, is he going to be relatable to the players? Is he modern enough? I think he would be, but
is the relationship good enough with Dolan who he walked out on?
Right.
There's a lot of questions with him.
While I think it's more realistic than it has been at any point over the last 25 years, I don't think that that's realistic.
Yeah, me neither.
But my three were Udoka, Kidd, Van Gundy. So if I eliminate Van Gundy just based on realistic, and Udoka is ruled out, because the Rockets aren't going to let him go, that leaves me with Jason Kidd, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
And there are reasons why I like those three. I gave you the Van Gundy ones. Udoka's kind of the same cloth. He's a He's been proven to be a coach that can handle top talent, familiar with the top players. He's been a championship pedigree. I know he didn't win the one with the Celtics, but got to the NBA Finals there and probably would have won one if not for the, you know, off-the-court stuff there. But again, you can even poke holes in him, right?
Yeah, so, for sure.
So to me, Jason Kidd currently is the best option for the Knicks, and I don't even think it's close.
You know, I never thought I would stick with the Knicks for a second, but I want to throw this quickly on this on the side. I never really paid a ton of attention to this until some of his post-press conferences in the playoffs here. Are you of the mindset that the Knicks need more of a passionate communicator, like a front man? That shouldn't be number one.
From a head coach?
Yeah.
I didn't, to be honest with you, no, it didn't cross my mind.
Okay, and me neither, really, until I would flip over to MSG and I'd watch Walling those guys, and I'd obviously jump into the Knicks postgame coverage and watch Tom Thibodeau's. And by the way, I've seen regular season postgame press conferences, but it just struck me as, like, does that still resonate with players? It came across
like Carlisle,
as just
similar.
He's got
a similar.
Yeah, but Rick's got the concepts, whereas at least he's got the offensive concepts that I don't think Tom Thibodeau does. And this is not to denigrate Tom, and I don't even know if it's a massive thing, but I don't like the way the Knicks are. You know, playing on Broadway, you know, a marquee team. It shouldn't be number one, but ideally, you have a coach who knows how to coach, relate to younger players, but also have a little presence. Tom Thibodeau was getting depressing listening to him. I don't know.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Service is not available in all areas.